This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Demonstrators from Saturday's rally in March at the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. were shocked upon returning home to find news coverage of the event they had just witnessed had been largely ignored by local television stations. Moreover, many participants in the rally were angered by some of the print reports, and in particular one radio reporter who estimated the crowd size significantly smaller than much of the media. A Washington Post headline read, "More than 100,000 marched in Washington." The Los Angeles Times reported, "More than 100,000 marched in Washington." And as did the United Press International. Organizers, who traditionally overestimate their own crowds, weighed in at around 200,000, and an NPR reporter, Nancy Marshall, estimated far fewer in her spot coverage.
Was the crowd as large as expected?
It was not as large as the organizers of the protest had predicted. They had said there would be 100,000 people here. I'd say there were fewer than 10,000. However, they did accomplish their goal of actually marching around the White House in one continuous stream of people. It is a little bit thin in some areas, but nonetheless, they have marched around the White House.
The report so incensed one listener to the point where he set up a Fire Nancy website and is urging listeners to call or write NPR about what they call Nancy's slanted reporting. Jeff Dvorkin is the ombudsman at NPR. We spoke with him and Peter Hart of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting earlier today. Jeff, I want to give you a chance to react. Clearly, a number of people who attended the rally and march here in Washington were startled and even angered by that crowd estimate of fewer than 10,000 provided by Nancy Marshall. What explanation does she give for such a underestimation of the event?
Well, I just spoke to her because I received a few emails courtesy of FAIR this morning, and she said that from where she was standing, which was right by the main speaking area, and from her perspective, she felt that it was fewer than 10,000. And she had that corroborated by the Associated Press, which also said that. Mm. Now, on the other hand, I think, and I said this to Nancy, that I felt she was mistaken because it was clear to lots of other people, myself included, I saw it on television, that there were more than 10,000 people there. I think that we get into a difficult situation when we start getting into crowd estimates on our own. These are always tricky areas. The producers of the program realized right after Ms. Marshall said that it was an unsubstantiated guesstimate. And for the future editions of that program, it was edited out, and the intro to the piece was rewritten to say tens of thousands of people were in Washington.
So how seriously does NPR take this sort of error in calculation? It appears to be a deliberate attempt to minimize the peace movement in the country.
I wouldn't say that it's a deliberate attempt to minimize the peace movement. I would say it was an attempt by a reporter to make sure that, in this case, she was being quite conservative, and I think inappropriately so. So what will happen now is that people at NPR will go over the script and probably add a correction tag to the website and also on the transcript should anybody want to read it or listen to it.
It does put a particular reporter in a challenging position when you're there in the midst of
sure.
a sea of people. And even the Park Service has gotten out of the business of trying to make the crowd estimates after the Million Man March.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think that as a former street reporter, I was caught in this once at a demonstration. I can't remember which one at this point. But, getting hammered by people saying you overestimated the crowd and others saying you underestimated the crowd. And you don't serve the listener very well by getting involved in that. I think it's much more important to talk about what the issues are that have brought the people out. And I think that to be fair to NPR, I think NPR did that in a number of interviews, an interview with Bishop Thomas Gumbleton, an interview with the Reverend Jesse Jackson, with reports from around the country, and where the issues about the coming war with Iraq, if such a thing is about to happen, are deeply explored. And I think that's the role of good journalism. I think NPR did make an error. I think we did a disservice to the demonstrators who marched, with their cause in mind, and we diverted people's attention from what the issues are by concentrating on the numbers game.
Peter Hart, an analyst with FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, is also on the line with us. Peter, what's your reaction to this?
I think, I'd first like to agree with a couple of things that Jeffrey said. I do think NPR gave a pretty broad sense of what the protests were like around the country. In fact, I appreciated the technique where NPR, in these two reports we're looking at, had a reporter in Washington, but also had one in San Francisco and in some other locations around the country. So they did give us a sense that there was a national day of protest at various locations around the country. And on that score, I think NPR did better than almost any other media outlet that I've seen so far.
With, of course, the exception of Pacifica, we had coverage in a number of different cities as well as Baghdad.
And of course. And I think that for NPR to take that approach, I think they should be commended for that. This particular report, however, in Washington, to undercount the crowd so tremendously, I do think it's serious. And also the other issue that I think caught people off guard was the idea that the organizers were disappointed by the turnout. That was reported on NPR and also in the New York Times. And in speaking to some of the organizers, they can't recall ever saying that to any reporters. So listeners and some of the activists are left wondering where that sense of disappointment came from. It was reported on NPR the first day and in the New York Times, but hasn't been fully explained, and we hope we can find out where that sense came from.
Well, I can tell you, Nancy Marshall spoke to some of the organizers who told her that, it was announced from the podium that 250,000 people were at the demonstration, which some of the organizers said, well, we're saying that because, we really had hoped for more. So I think that there's also a certain amount of, spin that goes on even in a demonstration like that. But I think that I would still go back to the point that the numbers are not as important as the content and as the issues are. And I think that's also something that needs to be reported again and again.
Peter, NPR wasn't the only one whose coverage was called in question. This isn't exactly a blackout, but it certainly did seem to be far less coverage of this event than I had anticipated, having been there and seeing the kind of turnout that there was. What was FAIR's feeling or assessment of that?
I think I would agree with that. You did have at the Washington Post, the hometown newspaper, you did have prior to this a sense from their ombudsman that he thought, Michael Gettler, that he thought the reporters at the Post could be doing a better job conveying some of the anti-war sentiment. And he had written this a few weeks ago. So I think that sensibility was in the air at the Washington Post. And they did give the story a bit more attention than they may have given it otherwise. They actually had a pre-rally story, and the day after the rally, you certainly didn't have to hunt around in the paper to find the story. The New York Times, on the other hand, it's on page 8, and that's a story that's a little under 500 words. So you do get a sense that the New York Times doesn't take this very seriously, doesn't think that it's particularly newsworthy. So I think there's a huge disparity there. The LA Times didn't do a bad story either. As far as I know, there wasn't a lot of television attention being paid to this story. If you look around through Nexus, the news database, you don't find a whole lot of stuff on CNN or on Fox News Channel. So we do have a TV press corp that's largely based in Washington that I think sat this one out, that just decided it wasn't that important. The reason this is important to talk about is the fact that it does have an effect on how Americans are thinking about the war. We know a couple of months ago when there was some elite dissent from some of the former cabinet officials in the first Bush White House, when they were making their arguments in the media, in the Wall Street Journal and on Nightline, you did see support for the war drop because the debate was opened up a little bit. That's when the media can provide that kind of debate. That's when you do see people become more engaged in this issue.
Peter Hart of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. We also spoke with Jeff Dvorkin of NPR. Damu Smith, founder of Black Voices for Peace, is among those concerned about the underestimation of crowds and the news coverage in general around the peace movement. He was one of the speakers who had a clear vantage point on crowd size this Saturday. But during the event, his focus was clearly on stopping the impending war against Iraq. Damu Smith.
Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Condoleezza, Powell, they are the axes of evil! This is the most undemocratic, anti-worker, anti-poor, racist, pro-business, warmongering, elitist, repressive government we have ever had in these United States of America. We are standing here at the Vietnam War Memorial, where 55,000 names are engraved in that granite. 55,000 young men and women who lost their lives in a wasted, criminal, racist war against the Vietnamese people. 1 million Vietnamese people plus died. And now Defense Secretary McNamara, who served during the Johnson administration, says it was all a mistake. We the people today say this. We the people are not going to allow you to make that mistake again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. No, never again. I want to end by saying this. This march is all right, but it means nothing if we don't go back and organize in the schools, in the temples, in the mosque, in the churches, in the daycare centers, in the rural areas, in the cities, organize women and Asians and Black people and Latino people and Asian people and youth. Everybody has got to be with this tent. We got to build this movement. And I want everybody to know, support this good work of International Answer. They're doing such a wonderful job. Give them a big round of applause. And I also want you to support the only radio station that's broadcasting this nationwide live, Pacifica Radio and WPFW 89.3 FM. Thank you very much. I love you.
Damu Smith, founder of Black Voices for Peace and a programmer at WPFW. Could you tell? You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Four lawmakers who voted against granting President Bush authority to wage war against Iraq are now facing difficult reelection campaigns. Eli Pariser of www.moveon.org has crafted a website to rush to their political aid with $1.8 million.
The campaign is part of an ongoing effort to help folks turn their concern over what's going on in Iraq into political energy. And basically what we have done is we have about 500,000 members across the country. We sent out a mailing to them basically saying reward the heroes, help, you know, the people who took a stand of conscience, did the right thing, and did it with the knowledge that, you know, they might face some pretty serious political consequences. You know, let's help them out. Let's show them that we're behind them. Usually when we do a mailing like that, and we raise money for a number of candidates who are in tight races and are in line with our issue positions, we'll get $100,000, $150,000 total over a week.
Okay.
This time, we raised about that much in about 4 hours. And,
oh my.
You know, in 48 hours, we had raised over $1 million. And by now, we've raised about $1.8 million. So it was sort of an amazing experience for us. And clearly, people are pretty happy to support those Congress people who did the right thing.
Yes, indeed. It sounds like they're just enthusiastic about supporting them. How many Congress people are we talking about that are finding themselves in political hot water as a result of that specific vote?
Well, I think there are a number, but we've focused on a few key races. Where we believe, you know, the Congress people are good folks across the board, where they're in tight races. And so we focused on four Congress people, the late Senator Paul Wellstone, and three members of the House of Representatives. And then we also focused
on... Who are they?
Rush Holt in New Jersey, Rick Larson in Washington State, and also Jay Inslee in Washington State. And we also focused on a couple challengers, people who are running against folks who voted for the resolution authorizing force and who have taken positions against the resolution. So Bill Bradbury in Oregon and Shelley Pingree in Maine, both of those folks we've been supporting.
Mm-hmm. And so basically you've got $1.8 million or so to help with these six different campaigns?
Well, yeah. The way that our website works, we don't make any big decisions about, you know, who the money goes to. We present people with a list of candidates, and it's actually very easy. People just go to www.moveonpac.org, and they put in, you know, the dollar amount that they want to give to each of these candidates. They put in their name and address and their credit card information in a secure page, and off it goes. And it goes directly into the candidate's bank accounts, so they can start spending it immediately, which as we enter the final stretch of this race is pretty welcome. We get messages every day saying thank you from the campaigns. So part of what's exciting to me about this campaign is that rather than having a few big donors where you have a lot more red tape, you know, we have 50,000 people who have given $15 or $25 or $50.
Is that the average contribution?
The average contribution is around $30.
Mm-hmm. And so all these people have given this amount in large numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, 50,000 contributions. You know, we've never seen anything like it. But clearly, folks are, you know, the peace movement's willing to put its money where its mouth is on this issue. And really support the folks who have taken a stand of conscience.
So the money that was earmarked for the late U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone, will that now be directed to Vice President Walter Mondale's candidacy if and when he formally announces?
Well, let me first say that you know, we've just been heartbroken by that loss because you know, Senator Wellstone's campaign was our members, you know, favorite by a long shot. As I said, they get to choose where they put their money, And Senator Wellstone's campaign, you know, received a large chunk of the contributions. People just, you know, were so inspired by his stand of conscience and who he was. And so it's just very painful for us that he and his wife and his daughter and campaign staff, you know, died in the plane crash. But I really can't comment on exactly what's going to happen. I don't have a very clear understanding of all the law involved, but I know that that money will be put to use in Minnesota, you know, for the political ends that Paul Wellstone was working for.
Mm. Your website, if you go to your website, which is www.moveon.org, you see a place where you can actually print yourself a free poster on regime change.
Mm-hmm.
Describe that poster.
The poster is basically a sort of tongue-in-cheek comment on the Bush administration's agenda, and you know that if folks don't like the kind of regime change that the Bush administration is pursuing, they can engage in a little regime change of their own on November 5th,
mm-hmm.
and you know we encourage them to go out to the polls and do their civic duty and make sure that, you know, that President Bush understands that the war on Iraq that he's pursuing is not supported by his constituents.
So what will MoveOn.org do after the elections?
Well, I mean, we'll continue to work on, you know, stopping this preemptive unilateral war on Iraq. That's something that our members are deeply concerned about. And, you know, as other issues come up, the way that we work is that we listen very closely to our members. And so as things come up that concern them, we will take action on those issues. It might be the environment. It might be, you know, campaign finance reform. Who knows?
Any final thoughts on your part?
As a person who's, you know, deeply concerned about this war on Iraq, I really can't stress enough how important this upcoming election will be. I think if President Bush, you know, has a right-wing sweep in the election, you know, that'll send a very clear message to him that the American people are in support of his policies. And if a lot of his favorite candidates are defeated, that will also send a very clear message that people are fed up with his agenda. And I think that's what we're trying to do, and I hope that the listeners will, you know, do their part to make sure that that happens.
Eli Parishners of www.moveon.org. Well, despite continuous rain, an estimated 3,000 people marched in Maine's capital, Augusta, on Saturday in an energetic expression of outrage and dissent. Represented amongst the protesters were some 40 organizations, including Peace Action Maine, Veterans for Peace, the Penobscot Indian Tribe, and the Maine Council of Churches. Meredith DeFrancesco reports on what's being called the largest protest in Maine's capital in several decades.
With signs reading such messages as democracy or empire, you can't have both, Maine residents marched in solidarity in opposition to the U.S. war in Iraq, the escalation of U.S. involvement in global conflicts, and the anniversary of the Patriot Act. Adding to the analysis presented by an extensive array of speakers was a written statement by writer Stephen King and a taped message from Representative Dennis Kucinich. Protesters declared their march a rally to reclaim peace and justice, contrary to the U.S. use of violence to solve problems and advance policies. Reverend Bob Bonthius, co-founder of International Witness for Peace and Maine resident, spoke at the rally.
It's what we stand for as much as what we stand against. And the first thing we stand for, I believe, is a spirit of international altruism, and that means we stand against a spirit that dominates our present foreign policy, which is one of egotism. The administration has made its views known worldwide. They've said, we'll go wherever we want to go, we'll surveil whoever we want to surveil, and we will punish whoever we think needs to be punished. That's national egotism.
This is an unignorable egotism that has spread throughout U.S. policy and unrepresentative of the feelings of the people in the United States, says Dud Hendrick of Maine Veterans for Peace.
All of us Americans have been shamed. We have been shamed by America's failure to sign the Landmine Treaty. We have been shamed by America's failure to ratify the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. We have been shamed by America's involvement in the illicit trading of small arms and light weapons. We have been shamed by the failure to ratify the Convention on the Rights of the Child. We have been shamed by America's refusal to adopt the International Criminal Court Treaty. We have been shamed by America's walkout in the International Convention on Racism in Durban, South Africa. And we have been shamed by America's refusal to sign the Kyoto Accords.
Hendrick also referred to the recently brought to light Year 2000 report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, by the Project of the New American Century, whose authors include six who now hold key defense and foreign policy positions in the current Bush administration, and this year's national security strategy as chilling indications of the Bush administration's objective to set up military bases throughout the world to protect U.S. economic interests, referred to as Pax Americana.
If you do not already know about this frightening plan, this will really spur you to take to the streets. In essence, it lays out a plan for a permanent U.S. military and economic domination of every region of the globe, unfettered by international treaty. The U.S. will strike preemptively wherever and whenever it damn well pleases.
Attorney Phil Warden underscored that the United States' attempt to justify a preemptive attack on Iraq as self-defense requires a change in international law, and that the Bush administration's bullying of the UN catastrophically undermines its international role, a main concern for many at the rally.
We should see this U.S. attack on the UN in its historic context. By unilaterally asserting its own interests as the sole superpower, the U.S. is laying down the rules for a new stage of history, a future in which it will play a domineering and predatory role.
At the forefront for those present was the reality of collateral damage. 12-year-old Charlotte Aldebron of Presque Isle shared stories of children affected by the U.S. military and economic assaults on Iraq and Afghanistan.
And the children in Basra, southern Iraq, who today play in the dust while air raid sirens scream around them, because we keep dropping bombs. And all the children in Iraq who will never grow up because they have leukemia and cancers from the depleted uranium in our missiles. And they can't get any drugs or radiation treatment because we won't let their country have them. Can you hear our voices yet? Yeah. President Bush asked each American child to give a dollar to help Afghani children. Here's my dollar's worth. It is the voice of 6-year-old Palico, who was carried to the hospital still wearing her party dress from the wedding that we bombed for 2 hours, killing her whole family by mistake. And 2-year-old Aaliyah, who was dug out of the rubble where her family was crushed when we blew up their village, again, by mistake.
Protesters were heartened by the numbers taking a stand, that they were acting in solidarity, not unilaterally. Susan Dixon Smith of Bangor.
And it's just wonderful to see that represented and know that there are people all over the state here and all over the world. It was a wonderful feeling of solidarity to know that this was part of global action and to feel that brotherhood and sisterhood with people all around the world who are rejecting the use of force and rejecting violence as a solution to problems.
For Pacifica Peace Watch, this is Meredith DeFrancesco, reporting from WERU in East Orland, Maine, with the assistance of Amy Brown.
And I'm Verna Avery Brown. When we come back, new strategies for mobilizing around peace, reflections from peace activist Daniel Berrigan, and the voice of Patti Smith as she tunes up for peace. We'll be right back.
Thank you.